the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
I grew up in Florida at a time when the state didn't have a Major League Baseball team. Our two main choices in the 80s were the Atlanta Braves and Chicago Cubs, because both teams had games shown on national TV stations. I began watching the Cubs in 1987, and my dad and I bonded watching this team, later savoring every bit of 1989 when the boys of Zimmer made it to the playoffs and gave the Windy City hope for the first time in decades. One of the star players of those late 80s and early 90s Cubs teams was Hall of Famer Andre Dawson. I can still hear announcer Harry Carey going nuts when Andre would hit a ball out of the park and onto Waveland Avenue.
There's a drive, way back, it might be, it could be, and it's a home run!
Andre was a big part of my childhood. Heck, he was a big part of lots of fans' lives. Nowadays, he's making a difference for baseball in another way, by hosting the Andre Dawson Classic at historic Dodgertown in Vero Beach. The Andre Dawson Classic is the annual round-robin collegiate baseball tournament designed by Major League Baseball to highlight historically black colleges and universities and their baseball programs. Dawson, a Miami native, played at an HBCU in his home state, Florida A&M in Tallahassee. He went on to have a Hall of Fame career, mostly with the Montreal Expos and Chicago Cubs, but also with the Boston Red Sox and Florida Marlins, as they were known in the 90s. Andre will be joining me in just a moment to discuss this tournament, as well as his career and several other things he's up to nowadays. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. This podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course this podcast, to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. Andre Dawson was inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 2010. He still lives in Florida, and he has a lot going on. Let's bring him in now to hear what. Andre, I can't tell you what it means to have you on the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
Alrighty, well, let's start right there with what I talked about in the intro, and that's the Andre Dawson Classic, which starts this Friday, February 23rd, and runs through February 25th at historic Dodgertown in Vero Beach, Florida. So tell me how many teams are involved, what to expect each day, what the format of the tournament is like. Just kind of give us the skinny on everything going on down there in Vero Beach.
It's a 16 round robin tournament. The Andre Dawson Classic. It's an annual round-robin collegiate baseball tournament with historically black colleges and universities. And like you mentioned, it's going to be held at the Jackie Robinson Training Complex in Vero Beach this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And each day, there will be games going on. There will be a doubleheader televised games on Friday night, and I have been associated with the tournament itself in Major League Baseball. This is going on in year six now. So I'll drive from my home in Miami up to Vero Beach. I'm excited about this year again. My school, Florida A&M University, will also be a participant in the tournament. So I'm glad that I'll get the opportunity to see these student athletes again. And as you know, you may or may not know, last year they were conference champions.
Oh, very cool. Yes, actually, our newspaper in our chain, the Tallahassee Democrat, they do a great job of covering Florida A&M up there. And the other teams that will be involved include North Carolina A&T, Prairie View A&M, Alabama State, Southern, and Grambling on top of Florida A&M. So, you know, Andre, you grew up in Miami. You went to school way up in Tallahassee. How did they get you involved in this tournament? And I'm sure it was very easy for you to get involved because it's something near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, well, the tournament kicked off actually in 2008. And at that point, it was just a HBCU Classic, baseball classic. And Major League Baseball got me involved. Like I said, this is going on year six now. And when they reached out to me, wanting to rename the classic DeAndre Dawson Classic. It was one of those eye-opening moments for me, and I just felt tremendously honored to be able for them to look at me and have me, you know, be a part of the actual participation itself. And there's only two HBCU players that are in the Hall of Fame. That's myself and the late Lou Brock. But for them to reach out to me, you know, it was awe-inspiring and a tremendous honor. And, you know, I just jumped at the opportunity.
Yeah, I don't think they could have a better representative player. You were always such a great ambassador of the game, and it's awesome that you're able to do this for them. What else does it mean for you? As you mentioned, this is being held at the Jackie Robinson Training Complex, which when Jackie broke the color barrier in 1947, you know, Branch Rickey did so much to fight and have him there, and it just turned out to be such a great thing down there in Vero Beach. And so what does it mean to have it at that complex now that they've moved it to Vero Beach?
Well, it's in the past been in New Orleans at the Academy. And I think it's something that had been sort of tossed around for the last couple of years about moving the event to that particular facility. And initially it kicked off Black History Month. That's how the classic itself got started. It kicked off Black History Month. And for it to be at the Jackie Robinson Complex, I don't think that, you know, it serves as a source for it to be somewhere else. You know what Jackie Robinson did for the history of this country. And it's probably, I would say, centrally located four teams, the HBCU teams, that is. Alabama being not that far away, teams from the SWAC, Florida A&M. So in my estimation and in opinion, it's the ideal spot to have it.
Yeah, I used to love going down there and taking spring training games. And if people are able to get down there for this tournament, they should absolutely check it out. Dodgertown is an experience, and it's a wonderful place to see a baseball game. And as Andre mentioned, some of these games will be on the Major League Baseball Network. So, Andre, I want to ask you some questions about your career. But before we do, is there anything else you'd like to get in front of the audience about the Andre Dawson Classic, the teams that'll be here, or anything else about the tournament?
Well, the tournament itself, we're trying to do some things a little bit different to draw maybe a little bit more participation, I should say, outside of just the families being there. And we're trying to get a band there. I don't know which particular band and if that's going to happen this year, but we're trying to get a little bit more entertainment for the fans themselves. And it's really going to be, I think, in my estimation, worth watching, because a lot of these kids are coming up through Major League Baseball initiatives. And we're trying to just get quality talent to come out and play in the HBCU schools, because a lot of I should say kids from the inner city, kids from the urban communities, they really are bypassed a lot because they can't afford to play the game. And with the scholarship allotment being what it is at the collegiate level, I think more of them opt to the sports that will garnish them a full scholarship, and that's basketball and baseball. So we're trying to really entertain the idea of having more kids come through the initiatives and consider historically Black colleges and universities and just, you know, give themselves that opportunity to see what that experience is like.
All right. Well, you know, I grew up just north of Vero Beach in Brevard County near the Melbourne area. I'm also the sports editor over the newspaper in Jacksonville, and their college up there, Ed Waters. That would actually be a great one to get down in the tournament at some point, because they've always got a really good baseball team. So not sure if you're helping book the teams or if that's done out of your control, but, you know, always think about Ed Waters, good baseball team up in Jacksonville. And, you know, like I say, you know, I grew up watching baseball in the 80s, You know, there wasn't a Miami Marlins. There was no Tampa Bay Rays. So I basically had two choices. You could watch the Braves on TBS. You could watch the Cubs on WGN. And it just so happened I was 10 years old, 1987, your first year with the Cubs and your assault on the home run record that year when you ended up with 49 home runs. It was just incredible to watch. You know, I'd love listening to Harry Carey call your home runs. Nobody was more enthusiastic about a home run being hit. You know, when you moved from Montreal to Chicago and you got that new audience, you know, you were already a great player, but it actually showcased you to a lot of people who hadn't seen you. So what did that move to Chicago mean for you and your career?
Well, it really, I should say, meant a lot to me, first of all, just to get off of the AstroTurf, which was proven to be damaging to my knees, and apparently appeared that it would cut short my playing career. I knew I had to get on a natural playing surface. It was with the hopes of still being in the National League and being on a natural playing surface, and Chicago came to mind first because of those reasons. Atlanta was my second choice. And when, you know, you were faced with collusion, which was a big part of the game at that time, I really had my back against the wall. But said as a free agent, I had leverage and I was going to go where it was I wanted to play. And because I was being offered a cut and pay to stay in Canada, it was time for me to move on. And that particular season, the first season, kind of rejuvenated the second half of my career. I still felt my better years were ahead of me, and after not winning the MVP award twice in Montreal, finishing runner-up once to Mike Schmidt, and on another occasion to Dale Murphy, I didn't think that I would win it playing across the border. And lo and behold, what happened the first year out of Canada, I won it. As a result of being with a different ball club. So the fans really, really embraced me and allowed me to get my feet underneath me, not feel my way around, but feel like I was a part of that organization. And I think by being a veteran of 10 years, that kind of relieved a little bit of the pressure that I would put on myself initially. But I look back at those 6 years that I spent with the Cubs, and, you know, they were some of the best years of my career.
Absolutely. It was just so much fun to watch you. And I can remember being a kid in the street trying to emulate your batting stance with the straight leg foot forward and the 1 foot back. But did you always have that kind of unique batting stance? Where did you develop that, Andre?
Well, you tinker with what feels comfortable. And you play so many games, especially at the major league level. But there are going to be days when you go out and you don't feel, you know, like you have your rhythm, your time, and you feel a little bit off. So you kind of experiment with a few different things. And I want to be comfortable at all times. And depending on what the pitcher would be doing as far as his approach, I may close my stance to keep that front shoulder closed, and sometimes I may open up a little bit to take away the inner half of the plate. But for me, it was all about adjustments because it's a cat and mouse game, and that's what you got to do. You got to understand what it is they're trying to do to you, if they're going to attack what they feel are your weaknesses, and you got to counterattack. And it's just a continuation of, you know, making adjustments on a daily basis.
Yeah, your bat speed, I think the only person I think that even could equal your bat speed, especially around that time, was Gary Sheffield. The two of you guys just could get around on a ball so quickly. You know, I mentioned Harry Carey a couple of minutes ago, and, you know, I played a small clip in the intro of him calling one of your home runs. Did you ever go back and listen to his calls of your home runs? And what do you remember about Harry? Because obviously you're playing, you don't get to hear him as he's going, but he's one of the things that kind of brought the Cubs to a larger bit of life.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of Harry's calls of my home runs, and as you mentioned, he added a lot to when he would make a home run call. And For me, he was like the Pied Piper on the ball club, because everywhere we went, the fans were engaged. Harry would sit on the front of the bus when we get off the bus. He'd be the first one that the fans would flock to. And we enjoyed it because, you know, we could sneak out behind him and get to the lobby and, you know, not have to worry about dealing with the fans initially like that. But what a wonderful character, bubbly, full of enthusiasm and excitement. And, you know, it was just enjoyable to be able to listen to him call games.
Yeah, and what a team you guys had. I mean, that heart of a team you guys had for there. You know, you had Mark Grace at first, Ryne Sandberg at second, you and Wright, Sean Dunston and the Shawnometer at shortstop. You know, you had Greg Maddux early on. You had Rick Sutcliffe. I mean, just those teams were just so much fun to watch, and it was such a great product. And, you know, I did want to ask you this. You know, I know recently it was announced that your former teammate Ryne Sandberg, he is, you know, battling cancer right now. I'm curious, do you ever get to talk to Rhino? Or did you two stay closer? Was it more of a just a teammate relationship?
Yeah, we're communicating on a weekly basis. I'm trying to keep him positive and upbeat because I experienced myself prostate cancer back around 2012. And it's not as serious as his condition is at the moment, but he's pretty upbeat. And, you know, he started his treatments. And, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, be there for him and, you know, be able to do whatever I can to keep him positive, keep him strong. And I initially had a conversation with him, and he sort of broke down a little bit, but he gathered himself. And at that point, I decided to get off the phone and, you know, give him his space. But no, I do communicate with him on a weekly basis. I was locked between him and Sean Dunston, and I had one guy on my left who wouldn't shut up. He would talk all the time. And then the guy on my right never said a word, and that was Rhino. And, you know, I look back, he was the consummate teammate. He played the game every day, played the game at a different level real well, and truly one of the most enjoyable teammates I ever had.
Yeah, very good. And I appreciate the update. The two of you are such great superstars, and you were both just so quiet and laid back. And you're right, I used to love some of Sean Dunston quotes. What a fun personality he was. But, you know, I've always been curious, so now I finally get to ask you in person, where did the nickname Hawk come from?
That was given to me at early age, early childhood, actually, from one of my uncles. I would sit and watch a men's travel team practice, and at the end of their practice, one of my uncles would call me, well, two of them actually would call me out to the field. One would throw batting practice, one would hit me fungibles. And if the ball took a bad hop, the uncle said that, well, for a kid your age, you don't really feel intimidated by the baseball. And he says, it kind of reminds me of a hawk. And he just, out of the blue, started calling me Hawk. My family nickname was Pudgy. I don't really know why. I was never really a fat kid. But the Hawk just stayed with me all those years. And people felt that, you know, I had this intense scowl about me when I was out on the playing field. But that was my form of concentration and focus. That scowl, I can see because when I look at video, I'm like, wow, I'm really intense and in tune to the guy standing out there on the mound. But that's where it came from.
All right. Well, I wouldn't have wanted to be a pitcher staring you down. That's for absolute sure. You know, Andre, everyone does remember you as the slugger, but what people should know is you won 8 gold gloves, including 5 in a row after going to Chicago. So when you say that the grass saved your career over the turf, I mean, that it certainly did. But, you know, would you rather be remembered as a great fielder or a great hitter?
Well, I tried not to let one aspect of my playing ability overtake the other. So I would work diligently at all of the aspects of the game itself. I realized I had decent speed. I had to get my throwing arm back to where it was before I hurt it in college. And, you know, I go out every day. I practice on my throws to wherever they had to go. I would long throw to keep the arm stretched out. I would power throw to make sure that I had velocity behind my throws. And when I took band practice, I worked on hitting the ball to the opposite field. You don't just go up there trying to hit home runs. So for me, it was just trying to be as complete a ball player as I could. And I really enjoyed the fact of being able to win a Gold Glove. I can remember seeing individuals early on win the Gold Glove Award. Gary Maddux had a lock on it as a center fielder, and I said to myself, I really want to win one of those things. And, you know, as time passed, I continued to win it this year, then maybe not the following year, but another year. And I, in the end, had a total of 8. I'm going to get the Gold Glove Legends Award later this year in November, actually, at the Gold Glove Award ceremony. So I did. I took a lot of pride in my decent defensive play because I just wanted to be as complete a ball player as I could.
Yeah, not only did you track the ball down well, but I can still envision those laser beam rockets you would throw from right field. And players trying to score from second, they quite often got cut down, which is definitely why you were able to accomplish that. And you know, Andre, in my opinion, voters waited way too long to get you in the Hall of Fame. You finally got there in 2010 in your 9th year of eligibility. So when you finally got that call, you know, take me to that moment. How were you feeling then when they finally said, Andre, you're going to the Hall of Fame?
Well, it was year 9 of me being on the ballot, and I really didn't have anyone to hurdle at that point. I was always behind those guys that would get in before me. And I felt that, well, of course, this has got to be the window year for me. And I did something I had never done before. Usually I thought that maybe you get tipped off if you're going to get in so that you could invite some family over, let them enjoy that moment with you. But that was never really the case. So I went out and visited my mom and my grandmother, who had both passed on, and it was an emotional morning for me. My mom always told me that, you know, that inevitable is going to happen. Just let the process play itself out. She understood it. My grandmother, who was my chief mentor growing up, she always told me that baseball was recreation and my education was the key to the stepping stone and where it was going to take me in life. But you got to consider, you know, your education first and foremost. And I always kept that in the back of my mind, but I wanted to play as much baseball as I could. And seeing that they had both passed and not going to be able to be there to witness that moment with me, it made it an emotional day. And still not knowing whether I was going to get the call or not, I didn't have anybody at the home. And I went home from the cemetery. I told my wife I wanted to take a nap. I was retired. I was retired from baseball for, you know, what, 15 years now. And even though I was still involved in the game, working with Miami Marlins, I sensed that, okay, well, maybe this is going to be the year. And I went home. I took a nap. I told her to wake me up at 1 o'clock is usually around the time when you're going to get the call. And it was, well, about 12:45. She woke me up, and 1 o'clock, I didn't get the call. 1:05, I didn't get the call. And I made the comment to her, I guess, you know, it's not going to happen again this year. And as soon as I said year, the telephone rang, and it was the president of the Baseball Writers Association calling from New York, and he was welcoming me as the lone inductee into the 2010 class of the Baseball Hall of Fame. So at that point, it was a little bittersweet. I can only reflect on the two of them not being there, but I knew there was a lot of work that had to be done, and I immediately began working on the Hall of Fame speech. which in fact dedicated to my mother and my grandmother.
All right, very cool. I know we're running low on time. I just got a couple of more questions, and then I'll get you out of here. You know, spring training's just getting underway. Pitchers and catchers reporting. Players are coming in. Will you be doing anything for the Marlins, or do you go out to Arizona to do things with the Cubs? What should fans expect from Andre Dawson during spring training?
No, I have no affiliation with the Marlins anymore. Actually, I work for the Cubs at this particular time. I'm an independent contractor. So what I do is, mostly a lot of community relations work for them, sponsor season ticket holder and ballpark events. And I'm back and forth to Chicago. I live in Miami, but I'm back and forth to Chicago. I will at some point go out to spring training for that particular reason. I haven't been contacted as of yet, but I've been with them now going on 5 years.
All right. Well, Andre, we'll be looking for you. Is there anything else you'd like to get in front of the audience or to say about your tournament? Again, that's the Andre Dawson Classic, which is Friday, February 23rd through 25th at historic Dodger Town in Vero Beach. Anything else you want to get in front of people, Andre?
Well, just the fact that there will be, again, a double hitter game on Friday that will be televised. And at some point, I will probably be interviewed, but it's going to be a fun event. Obviously, I'm looking forward to it, and I just hope, you know, we can get the audience, the national audience, to watch and, you know, be entertained.
Absolutely. So, Andre, I do appreciate it with the most sincerity. You can probably tell I'm somebody who grew up watching you closely. And, you know, you talk about your mom and your grandmother. Well, my dad, who was taken way too early from cancer 20 years ago, I know he's watching down right now smiling that I get to interview you. So I appreciate you coming on here.
Well, thank you very much.
And that will do it for this episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters, and to quote the immortal Harry Carey, my whole philosophy is to broadcast the way a fan would broadcast. Well, as a kid that must have listened to 1,000 games called by Harry, I can vouch for him. He most certainly did. Thanks for listening, and join me again next time.